Welcome to Obesity, a Disease, the official Obesity Medicine Association podcast exploring the many facets of the disease of obesity. Obesity, a Disease podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Medicine Association, the clinical leader in obesity medicine.
Hello, and welcome back to the Obesity Medicine Association's podcast, Obesity, a Disease. I'm your host, Dr. Allison Rhodes, and I'm excited to continue our series exploring how obesity impacts different areas of medicine. Today, we are joined again by Dr. Charisse Dial, a board-certified orthopedic surgeon and fellow of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgery. Thank you for joining us again, Dr. Dial.
Thank you for having me.
So today, we're going to be talking a little bit more about the complications and postoperative considerations for patients. What are the most frequent postoperative complications you encounter after surgery in patients with obesity?
So the most frequent complications have to do with wound healing, infection, hardware failure, blood clots, implant loosening, increased recovery times, difficulty with anesthesia, higher revision rates. These are the things which we see most with orthopedic complications.
Why do you suspect that wound healing or infections are more common in this group?
Well, I think it has to do with a number of different aspects. One, there is a chronic inflammation that is going on in the case of a patient with obesity. The hormonal aspects of it are causing this low-lying chronic inflammation. There's the aspect of having a decreased immune response. There is poor vascularity of tissues, and there's like increased mechanical stress on the wounds. And all of these things added together can give you this problem with wound healing and infection.
When it comes to knee and hip surgeries, are there any complications that are especially concerning to you? And how do you address those with patients prior to surgery?
So with knee and hip surgeries, the most common complications are things like blood clots, implant loosening, longer recovery times, blood loss, especially if the size of the patient makes the surgery technically difficult. So the blood loss, a possible dislocation of the prosthesis, the loosening of the implant. As far as anesthesia issues, you can have pulmonary issues so that you can have difficulty with even starting the case, mask ventilation or intubation. Getting anesthesia in the form of nerve blocks can be difficult because the landmarks can be very, very difficult for you. And it also requires higher dosages of anesthetics to anesthetize a patient properly. And then after the surgery, because the implants see more stress, you can have higher revision rates.
When patients are beginning their rehabilitation and recovery journey after surgery, how do you find that obesity affects their ability to start mobilizing?
I think it makes it difficult. I think patients come into it with some limited mobility to begin with. We talked in the last episode about, you know, how obesity can alter mechanics and walking. You think about just the inability to get a full range of motion because you have more adipose tissue in the way, right? So you start off with a decreased range of motion. Now, it also requires the use of crutches or walkers afterwards. That can be very, very difficult for a patient with obesity. There are challenges that come with physical therapy because they're a weight-bearing ability is limited. They may not be able to put 100% on the limb. That can be much more challenging for someone who has obesity. And anyone with obesity always has an increased fall risk. And you put that on top of having pain, recent surgery, that risk goes even higher. So those are some of the challenges that that people have to deal with after the surgery itself, even once the surgery is accomplished.
Because of these challenges, do you find that patients with obesity typically need longer recovery times? And if so, what are some of the unique factors that you feel like contribute to that longer timeline?
I think they absolutely need more time to do this. One, you have to move a bit more slowly, right? If you are minding the wound management and such, you can't just start moving because we worry about the wound healing. So many times that is an initially delayed start or slower, more gentler start to range of motion, right? You have to get them comfortable with just getting up again and feeling stable, walking through space. So they have to get used to the crutches or the walkers or bracing, which can be difficult, right? Because due to the size of limbs, having proper fitting braces can be a problem. It can take longer to get those things available. You have to find physical therapy facilities that can accommodate patients who are larger. You have to deal with potential things like blood clots or infection that may delay your rehabilitation. So they do take longer to rehab. You have to be gentler. You have to go a little more slowly and methodically. But the key, of course, is to continue to progress systematically. You know, so I think that while it can take longer, if you have a systematic, logical, algorithmic progression, you end up in a place that can be, you know, equally helpful for them.
What steps can patients and clinicians take prior to surgery to reduce these risks? For example, are there any specific recommendations you give in terms of nutrition or blood glucose control?
Absolutely. I mean, the first thing is to think about, well, let's go back to the basics of like the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons. Have they made recommendations concerning this? And they absolutely have. In thinking about operating on patients with high BMIs, many times it's recommended that you consider delaying surgery and losing weight, because that in and of itself can decrease operative time, decrease the risk. You definitely have to consider participating in a weight loss management program before to get BMI more in keeping with safer levels of operation. You have to think about managing comorbidities. So we know that patients with diabetes have increased rates of infection and wound healing. You have to get the A1C under control. And sometimes you have to tell a patient, well, you cannot have surgery until your hemoglobin A1C, even something as straightforward as a arthroscopy. I've had to say, no, not until your hemoglobin A1C comes more in keeping with what's normal. You have to manage their blood pressure. You have to think about obstructive sleep apnea, which is very present. You have to think about pulmonary disease. You do have to think about things of nutritional status, like hypoalbuminemia or vitamin D deficiency. We know that patients that have obesity are significantly can many times have a lot of vitamin D deficiency, and you want to address that. Before, they can have iron deficiency. So I think that preoperatively, you have to manage as many things as you can: glycemic control, weight management, smoking cessation, right? Because smoking gives you a whole nother level of risk. So you are trying to do is minimize as many things as you can before. So if you reduce weight, stop smoking, get the blood sugar under control, manage the comorbidities, this puts the patient in the best possible status for the surgery. And if you can do that, because it's not an emergent surgery, then that's more ideal.
What role do you feel like patient education plays in ensuring not only success with weight loss maybe prior to surgery, but certainly long-term success for further weight loss and then maintenance of that after surgery?
It is absolutely essential. We know that weight loss, weight management is a lifelong struggle. I can get anybody to lose weight today. Anybody. Can I get them to keep it off? No, I cannot. Okay. So if I am thinking about, you know, how am I going to help this person long term? I can't think about, okay, I got to get 40 pounds off you before surgery. I can get 40 pounds off of you before surgery. But if you put the 40 pounds on right after surgery again, you're putting the same stresses on. We're going to be in revisions. So you have to educate patients that this is a lifelong commitment, but that the rewards are lifelong. So what you're doing is quality of life increases forever. If you manage this, you can have better lifestyles and better life quality forever. So it's very important to educate them, not just about, you know, yeah, this is what you have to do right now, but in the long run, how are you going to preserve that joint replacement? How are you going to get the benefit of that joint replacement? How are you going to manage your weight long-term? How are you going to increase your exercise long-term? All of these things, that education is crucial. If you do not start with getting buy-in and a knowledge base from the patients, then everything else becomes lost. Because afterwards, when you're not with them, seeing them every 4 weeks, you know, they're back into the same habits.
Dr. Dial, you truly seem to have an incredibly unique perspective on orthopedic conditions and obesity and the complex interactions. For your fellow orthopedic surgeons, if you had three quick tips or three top pieces of advice for how they can incorporate this level of patient education and motivational interviewing in their practice, what would you recommend?
I think the first thing you have to do is be willing to let your patient know that it's important. Studies show us that a doctor talking to a patient about anything makes the patient aware that it's important and can help alter their behavior. So first you have to be willing to have a conversation to say that this is important. This does not have to be a long drawn out thing. This can be a minute and a half or 2 minutes of, okay, you have arthritis. Part of the issues are the fact that, you know, at this stage, your joints are wearing out. There's a lot of inflammation. Some of the things that are responsible for that have to do with lifestyle. One of them is the excess weight that is put on your joints. So you have to, one, be willing to open that conversation. Two, you have to either be willing to discuss concretely how they can manage the problem or where you think they should go for that help. So you either have to be willing to say, okay, we're going to talk about how you're going to address this problem and I will help you with it. Or you have to be willing to say, okay, you have this problem. I think that you need to see person X. You cannot just send them back to their medical doctor. That's not the answer. Because clearly their medical doctor has said to them before, you need to lose some weight. But it didn't happen. So that's not the answer. I think you have to educate yourself on the resources that are around you so that you can make that referral. Okay. And then the third thing you absolutely have to do is follow up. So many times I will see a patient in the office. We all have to take people's height and weight. It's just part of what you have to do for good documentation. You know what a patient weighs when they see you. When they're ready to do this, you can say something as simple as, okay, I see you're here with your weight today. Do you think you could make it a goal to lose 4 pounds by the time I see you next? Studies show that if a woman has 1,200 calories a day, she'll lose a pound a week.
I've got a meal plan right here. You can print it up. Doesn't matter what. I've got a meal plan right here. That's 1,200 calories a day. Would you try it? Do you think that in some way you can lose a pound a week so that you can see me in a month, and when I check you, you'll be 4 pounds lighter? Most people say, absolutely, doctor, I can lose 4 pounds in a month. Next month, you actually have to check it. And you have to say, look at that. I saw you lost 6 pounds. What'd you do? And they tell you, great. You think you can lose 4 more this month? And that follow-up, that talking to a patient to let them know it's important to you, giving them concrete information about how they can address the problem, following up to let them know that you're still watching, you still think it's important. Those are three things that anyone can do. It doesn't take a ton of time. Those are three things anyone can do. Any doctor can print out, if they're so comfortable, a 1,200 calorie diet. Nothing unsafe about that. You could certainly do that. Or just simply say, here is the nutritionist that I work with. They're excellent at this. You got to know your resources. So those are the three things that I think that any one of us can do. Doesn't take a tremendous amount of time. We can add it to our visits without delaying us too much. And those three things can be life-altering for our patients.
I love that you highlighted that advocacy is such an important role, creating access for patients to different resources and providing them with that accountability. Sounds like those three things are absolutely tantamount to helping a patient not only achieve their weight loss goals, but ultimately open a new chapter in their health journey. If you had one piece of advice for patients with obesity who are preparing for orthopedic surgery, what would it be?
I think my one piece of advice would be to be as physically prepared for the surgery as possible. That, of course, has lots of facets, right? That is, okay, if I can lose weight, I should lose some weight. I should manage my nutrition better. I should get as physically fit as I possibly can to ready myself. So I think that from this perspective, from an orthopedic surgeon's perspective, it is okay, be as physically prepared as you humanly can for this. And that, of course, may take you into weight loss, nutritional management, and increased fitness. When you go in more ready, yeah, you can come out with a better outcome.
Dr. Dial, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been an incredibly insightful discussion on the unique factors and considerations for patients with orthopedic conditions and obesity.
Thank you for having me. This has been wonderful.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Obesity, a Disease. For more information about obesity medicine podcasts and other valuable resources from the clinical leaders in obesity medicine, please visit www.obesitymedicine.org/podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode and want to listen regularly, head over to iTunes where you can subscribe, rate, and leave us a much appreciated review. The views expressed in this episode are those of the host and guest and do not necessarily represent the opinions, beliefs, or policies of the Obesity Medicine Association or its members. Please join us again for our next episode of Obesity, a Disease.